Like many others, Burt Bank was convinced it was a trick. He felt sure the Japanese were using English to lure the Americans outside so the executioners could more conveniently gun down their victims. We whispered to each other not to move, that it was a trap to get us to run, and then the Japanese would open up on us. Bank was lying on the ground, trying to persuade his buddies not to acquiesce in this enemy scheme, when a ranger walked right up to him and tugged him on the arm. "Come on, we're here to save you," he said. "Run for the gate." Bank still wouldn't budge. The ranger looked into his eyes and saw they were vacant, registering nothing. "What's wrong with you?" he asked. "Don't you want to be free?" A smile formed on Banks' lips. Something in the ranger's accent had reached him. "Where you from, boy?" he asked. "Oklahoma," replied the ranger. Bank tendered his hand. "Oklahoma's good enough for me. Say, give me a lift here. I can't see a thing." For prisoners who could see, the rangers looked exceedingly strange. They wore unfamiliar uniforms, carried unfamiliar guns. To starved men, the strapping soldiers looked impossibly huge, even menacing. Ralph Rodriguez was thoroughly frightened by the first ranger he encountered. "This guy looked like a giant. I thought, what kind of a man is this? He had guns everywhere, big hands. He could have been a man from Mars." He yelled out, "Any more Americans?" I was trembling when I raised my hand. "Here." Even when the fear of a massacre had passed, even when most of the prisoners understood that the Rangers were Americans come to liberate them, many were still curiously reluctant to go. They seemed suspicious of their good fortune. They couldn't shed the dour pessimism of captivity long enough to understand that captivity was over. Or perhaps on some half-conscious level, they still found it hard to transgress the order of the Japanese, the only authority they'd known for 3 years. Some of the POWs appeared almost ungrateful at first. John Cook, wearing only a G-string and high-top leather shoes, practically interrogated his liberator. I said, "Hey, who in the hell are you?" The guy had the funniest uniform on, with a funny-looking cap, and he was carrying something that looked like a grease gun, like he was going to grease up a car. He said, "We're Yanks. Get your ass out the main gate." "This guy's trying to save my life, and I'm sitting there carrying on an argument with him." I said, "No Yank ever wore a uniform like that." He said, "The hell we don't." As the precious minutes ticked by, the Rangers became more and more irritated by the strange stubbornness of the POWs. They didn't seem to understand the urgency of the situation. "I was getting annoyed," recalled Alvy Robbins. "I'd say to them, 'Listen, I got a job to do here. I can't spend a lot of time arguing with you. There's thousands of Japanese just up the road. We got to get out of here in a hurry.'" In some cases, the Rangers actually had to use physical force. "We just turned them around and booted them," said Lester Malone. "We couldn't fool around and explain nothing. They just didn't want to believe we were Americans." One of the prisoners Malone booted was Herbert Ott, the camp veterinarian. "I told him, 'Get the hell out of here.' I just turned him toward the gate and kicked him on out." Dr. Ralph Hibbs was another prisoner who needed a little physical convincing. "What the hell is going on?" Hibbs shouted at three rangers who came bounding down the path toward him with their Tommy guns blazing from their hips. "Where'd you come from? Are you guerrillas?" "We're rangers, General Kruger's boys." "What are rangers?" Hibbs demanded. He was taxing their patience. Finally, one of them picked up the doctor, muscled him around, and gave him a 10-foot kick squarely in the ass. The most recalcitrant prisoner of all was Hibbs's immediate superior, Colonel Duckworth, the American commander of Cabanatuan. Duckworth was digging in his heels, refusing to go, even refusing to let the Rangers escort others out. The colonel, who'd been suddenly awakened by the shooting and still seemed perplexed by the whole fracas, was strutting through the compound, buttonholing Rangers and shouting in their faces. He seemed unwilling to surrender authority to people whose identities and motives had been inadequately explained to him. Alvy Robbins was almost shocked by Duckworth's belligerence. He says, "I'm Colonel Duckworth, and I'm in charge here. Who the hell are you?" I said, "We're Americans. We've come for you." He said, "You can't do this. You're going to get us killed. The Japanese told us no escapes. No one leaves here until I say they do." I said, "You go see Captain Prince," and I went on about my business. Duckworth continued storming about the camp, demanding explanations, imploring the raiders to cease and desist. Finally, another ranger grabbed him by the arm and said, "With all due respect, you are not in charge here. General MacArthur is. Now I suggest you head to the main gate before we kick your ass there. I'll apologize in the morning." Still grousing about the situation, Duckworth shambled out the American gate. Plagued by night blindness, like so many others, he promptly fell into a ditch and fractured his right arm.